Welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 108. I'm Corey, and here's Daryl.
Yo.
Yo, I've got to tell you about the trip I just took to Seattle, Land of Magic the Gathering. And I'm excited to jump into talk. Yeah, did you know I was there?
No, why didn't you wait a week?
Oh, I know, yeah, well, it wasn't a magic trip, per se, but it was secretly a magic trip for me. My wife didn't know that.
Fair enough. I was like, did you get a chance to go to any of the big stores?
I'll talk about that, but I just want to kind of introduce our podcast before I get into it. We're going to get caught up on our Dominaria spoilers. There have been some new official spoilers on Dominaria, as well as there's an event that I'm preparing for this weekend, and I know, Daryl, you want to talk a little bit about how to approach Modern with the metagame starting to kind of take shape. I don't know if we can say it is or not, but we have a lot of similarities in the most recent results. But yep. Before we go too far, I want to just mention we are sponsored by manatraders.com. You can see that either above or below my head. I don't know where, if you're watching on Twitch.
It's always above.
I can never
remember. With the promo code, it's always above, yeah.
And then if you look above my head on the Twitch stream, you'll find the promo code CardKnockLife, which will get you 14% off your first 4 months through manatraders.com. You can rent any of the cool decks we're going to talk about today. If you want to,
except for Jund.
Except for Jund, right? That should be like the tagline. You can rent anything but Jund.
Yeah.
But if you're not watching on Twitch stream, you can remember that promo code because it's easy enough to do. CardKnockLife, one word, and put it in at checkout. You get 14% off. Can't beat that.
No, I like free money.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, I went to Seattle from Wednesday to... I just got back last night. And first of all, Seattle's awesome. It feels like they're living in the future a little bit. Like, everything is very, like, progressive there. And they just have a lot of stuff going on that seems to be, like, 10 years from now in the land of Wisconsin or wherever else I've been. There was, like, a virtual reality cafe.
In the land of Wisconsin, that's probably like 50 years.
Well,
the Midwest moves a little slow on things.
That's true. Milwaukee's pretty cool. But yeah, a friend of mine works for Google and lives out by Google, and so we went out to see them, and it's kind of cool to be surrounded by Google, Amazon, and what's the other one? Microsoft is all around that area, and very, very neat stuff going on. The city is, there's a lot to do. And we went to what's called the Museum of Pop Culture. If you're ever in Seattle or if you're ever going out for the GP in Seattle next weekend, I would highly recommend, or this coming weekend, right? I would highly recommend going to the Museum of Pop Culture, which is exactly what you'd think it is. It covers like music, and there's an exhibit on horror movies right now where they have like props from horror movies. There's like the Necronomicon pages from Evil Dead. And there's, like, the Freddy Krueger costume and stuff like that. And there's also, a two-story exhibit on Star Trek, all of, like, costumes and props from Star Trek. It's amazing how fake that stuff looks like in person, like, up close. That it's like, wow, you passed that for a monster? Like, the Predators in there and stuff.
Yeah.
But there is a fantasy part of the exhibit, and there is a room with Magic the Gathering art framed on the wall, as well as one case with some original proxies that Richard Garfield did of Alpha and Beta cards, or Alpha cards, probably. And you can see, like, the original mock-ups of, like, Shivan Dragon and Sarah Angel and stuff, so that was really cool.
Yeah, a little homage.
A little homage, yeah. And what we did on the trip is... we walked down to Mock's Boarding House to check that out. And that is what a fantastic idea. Mock's Boarding House is basically a restaurant / cafe. They've got beer and stuff at the bar. You can sit down at a table and you can play board games that you rent from them, or it's got a board game shop attached to it. Obviously it's Card Kingdom upstairs. But we put our names in and it took us like 3 hours to get a table. So we were actually long gone at that point. We went and ate dinner, but we had to go in and check it out and see what it was all about. And it was very cool. It was hopping on a Friday night. The place was packed. They had F&M going and everyone was running F&M. And there were probably like 15 or 20 tables full of people playing board games as well.
Nice.
Not like that unique of a concept, but for some reason it's something that you don't see a lot of. And I'm wishing that we had that sort of thing, like maybe up in Madison could support that kind of thing. A lot more places would benefit from beer.
I know that on the DL, one of the Madison store owners was trying to do something like Mock's Boarding House.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that's where he got the idea or he's just like, this would be awesome. I want to serve alcohol and food and play board games and magic. I don't know how close he is to successfully implementing that strategy, but it does sound pretty dang sweet to be able to go to like have an early F&M like 6 to 9 for, you know, people who are not of the alcohol consuming age.
Yeah.
And then have maybe like late night F&M from like 10 to midnight, 10 to 1, something like that, where, you know, the bar is open and alcohol can be served and things like that.
Right.
For your patrons who are over 21, and they can play, you can play in both F&Ms. It's not like exclusive, but like the under 21 patrons cannot play in the 10 to 1 F&M or something like that. That'd be kind of cool. I don't know. These are just ideas that are in my brain.
Yeah, I mean, Madison, I think, of all places, needs that sort of thing. And I hope that, you know, that... I'm guessing that... Can we talk about who this is? I'm guessing that's Mox Mania that you're referring to.
As far as I know, that was originally a discussion I had with them a while ago. But yes, I don't know if that's secret proprietary information.
Okay. Well, that would be a perfect place for that sort of thing. I'm sure the liquor license is a little funky with that. Mox Boarding House in Seattle is the one that actually has it split, right? So rather than having one shop and selling alcohol in that store, you have, you know, like a segmented...
there's like a divider wall or something like that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that seems like the most logical way to do it is to have like a dividing wall or address so that, you know, the company owns both addresses, but one address is a store and one had like a game store and the other address, which is right next to it, is a restaurant and bar.
Yeah. Yeah, they had a lot of traffic, lots of people in there, and they're open till like 2 o'clock in the morning, which is the other cool thing. Like, game stores typically close at, you know, 10 o'clock because they're not profitable after a certain point. People just hang out there. But if you're selling beer for $6 a beer, you're doing fine, you know?
Yeah, you're turning a profit.
Yeah. So, anyways, I just wanted to put that out there. We didn't get a chance to go to the Wizards headquarters and check out the offices and stuff. I'm told that they don't really have a tour or anything that you can do anyway, but... I know a friend that's gone out there and he came away with some cool swag promos and stuff.
Nice.
So, all right, let's jump into it. So we want to talk about the Modern Mox first. We got you've got the results posted here, and there's a lot of similarities in at least the 6 and 2 decks that I can see. But Dale, why don't you just kind of give us a rundown of what happened in the Mox last weekend?
So I don't have the link. Give me a second, and I'll grab the link for the actual. Box itself, but one big time Magic online grinder, Logan Nettles, also known as Jabberwocky, did a breakdown of the box, all the decks. Uh-huh. So since he played in the event, he could look at all the replays from the event, and so he took a look at all the replays in the last round with all the names and just farmed the deck archetypes and put it all together, farmed winning percentages and everything, and put together a nice little Google sheet here that he sent a screenshot out of on Twitter. This is the Easter Sunday Modern Mox, kind of giving a breakdown of who played what and their win percentage against the field. The top four decks, or five decks in the specific order, Hollow One with 23 players, Humans with 20 players, Storm with 13, Affinity with 10, Jund with 9. And so you're looking at 12%, 11%, 7, 5, and 5. 5 and a half and 5. The Mox had a total of 181 players.
Wow.
So, you know, those top 5 decks are basically almost 40% of the metagame.
Yeah, I'm curious to see the winning rate, and with the decks that he's listed here, the highest winning rates were Hollow One with 61.6%, Mardu Pyromancer, surprisingly, was 60.6%, although there's not a huge representation of that deck, 5 decks in the event. And then in third, it appears to be Humans with 58.8%.
Yeah.
So that's pretty significant. I think more important to take from this is which decks have the lowest winning rates, and this is kind of something I want to talk about a little later on today. The control decks are looking like kind of poor choices right now. Grixis Control, 41% win rate.
Same as Jund.
Yeah, Jund is actually quite low too. I'm surprised by that.
Burn, also the win rate for Burn is abysmal. The Burn went 8-21 on the event.
Oh, God.
So a lot of drops. So 27% winning percentage, like real, real tough. If you were a fan of the Mountain Lava Spike, Mountain Goblin Guide camp.
Yeah, Dredge 2, surprisingly, 33.3%. Ironworks, 35.3%.
Yeah. And so I think that, you know, if you look at these decks, it's a symptom of these are really linear, fast decks. And there's just a deck that's faster than them, which is the Hollow One deck. Because if you just cast you know, Burning Inquiry on turn one, and you win the roulette game. You get like a couple hollow ones in turn one.
Yeah.
Like Dredge is setting up their turn one with like Faithless Looting. Untap on turn two, Dredge, maybe hit an Archimuba, maybe hit a Bloodgast, which can't block a 4/4 hollow one, and get back a Prize Amalgam, which doesn't block a 4/4 hollow one very profitably either.
Yeah.
So it's just like the hollow one deck does what Dredge does better than Dredge. It's not as resilient because you don't have a bunch of these creatures that come back from the graveyard. You have Flamelike Phoenix and Bloodgast, so you have, you know, same number of creatures. Prize Amalgam versus Flamelike Phoenix, it depends on, you know, when you ask, well, what plays better offense? The question is, you know, do you want a flyer with haste or do you want a 3/3? The requirements on both of them are kind of equally difficult to trigger. Bloodgast is a little easier to bring back than it is to have a 5-power creature in play if your opponent's playing a lot of removal, or a 4-power creature where you need Hollow One or Gurmag Angler, or occasionally you get your Flameblade Adept to be a 4/2 or something like that.
Yeah.
But you can have the explosive starts with Flameblade Adept and Hollow Ones, and then you can also play the like Bloodgast and Flamelike Phoenix and Gurmag Angler side of the coin as well. So it just has a lot of play to it. And then also, when you just randomly cast, you know, Burning Inquiry, sometimes you just get your opponent. There's also the random casino of free wins that is Burning Inquiry, your opponent discards their lands, it has nothing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it's a very low percentage of that kind of stuff happens, but, like, it's available to you with a card that powers your main game plan of casting Hollow Ones and putting a bunch of cards in your graveyard to delve for Gurmag. So...
Yeah, you call that deck the casino, right?
Yeah, I call it red black casino. Yeah, that's what I call it.
I think that even the worst draws at the casino with that deck are still serviceable. Sometimes just merely having lots of cards in your discard is a fine strategy because you're eventually going to draw Gurmag or Tasigur and just start beating down. But the deck is all about just like racing out huge creatures fast, and you know, if you're like streamlined and laser focused on just making your opponent dead as soon as possible, then it doesn't really matter what your opponent is doing, right? So yeah. That's the good news. I mean, that's the good news for people who like to play quote unquote fair magic.
Yeah. So the problem with that is like decks like Burn and Ironworks are like turn 3 to 4.
Uh huh.
If they have the nut draw. So, like, Burn, your nut draw depends on your creature's living and getting in chip damage, and then, like, finishing them with burn spells for a turn 3 kill.
Uh-huh.
Whereas, like, you know, Ironworks, you have to have the Mox Opal plus a bunch of artifacts, like a Darksteel Citadel draw, to, like, win on turn 3. And the Hollow One deck can play discard, if it so desires, yeah, to, like, mess with those plans. It also can play, like, Lightning Bolt and Fatal Push, and then, like, the Casino element, and, like, have all of that in one package and like still function. So right. It gives it some interaction against the sort of linear combo decks and the linear aggressive decks while having the explosiveness it needs to get under the control decks.
Yeah. Things are not looking good for Storm these days. I'm kind of surprised by that. 42% win rate, 30 and 40.
Yeah, I mean, again, decks. Like Caleb Schur went 6-2 because Caleb Schur is a Storm genius.
Mm-hmm.
But like... It's a hard deck to play. It's hard against discard. It's hard against... It's a little better against removal, but, like, your game ones are really rough when your opponent has, like, Lightning Bolt and Fatal Push or Lightning Bolt and Path to Exile.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, you can get Casinoed by Hollow One, and Hollow One's just, like, a turn faster. Because, like, you put two 4/4s into play. Turn one, like, you play a Serum Visions, right? And they attack you for 8, and you play Baral. And if you had to take a shock or a Shivan Reef point of damage... And they attack you for 8 more. If you don't block, they bolt you and you're dead.
Yeah,
and okay. If you do block, you lose Brawl, which is a huge piece of your game plan. And if you don't take a point of damage from your lands, they can just kill Brawl. And then, like, you're dead on board to the Hollow Ones, and you don't have an answer to a 4-power creature. Or sure. 4-toughness creature. So, like, you know, multiple Hollow Ones is a death knell. One Hollow One is raceable, but it's hard. So it's like... This deck can be faster than Storm, and it also can just interact with Storm and slow it down by hitting with this card or killing its creatures. Having both of those elements in, you know, your normal, typical Hollow One deck does make it pretty tough to interact with.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I'd say we're approaching a period of modern where going first just means so much. You know, you cannot be on the draw in a format where Hollow One is all over the place and humans is all over the place. You just get rolled over. But yeah. The same is true for a lot of decks. I feel that way against Tron, too. Surprisingly, not a ton of Tron, but once again, a little bit slow to get started, and you're already just dead to, you know, Hollowed Ones and Blood Gas and Phoenix.
Yeah. And to give you an idea, because I've spoken to you, how much interaction can the Hollow One deck really play? Like, in the main board, it's got four bolts, and then, like, one to two, maybe three Collective Brutalities. Mm-hmm. So not a lot game one. So if you're, like, playing with creatures and you're trying to race the Hollow One deck, if they don't get the, you know, the casino draw where they put a bunch of Hollow Ones into play, and they're a little slower, you might be able to race them. But their sideboard is just a pile of removal.
Yeah.
Two Engineered Explosives, two Fatal Push, a Grim Lavamancer, three Ancient Grudge, two Collective Brutality, three Big Game Hunter, two Liliana. It's just a giant pile of removal. Yeah. Like, what type of creature are you playing? Oh, that one? I got some Lilianas. Oh, you're playing Tassiger? I got some Big Game Hunters. Oh, you're playing Little Creatures? I got some Grim Lavamancers and Fatal Pushes. Oh, you want to play Artifacts? I got you some Ancient Grudges. Like all of the creature decks are just look at the sideboard of the Hollow One deck and like, well, that's a lot of removal, and they get to take out, like, the bad creature, whether it's Bloodghast or Flameblade, whatever creature's bad against them.
Right, right.
Or they can shave on the, like, casino element and play, like, less Goblin Lords or something like that. Like, whatever, you know, whatever they decide to do there.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's a lot of removal. So.
Yes, it is. This is crazy, man. Goblin Lore, a playset of Goblin Lore is $100 in paper right now.
Are you kidding? I mean, I guess it's only been printed twice.
It has only been printed twice, but it's an uncommon. Yeah, I mean, it's printed in M10, which was quite a few years ago at this point. But yeah, I sold mine for like $17 when this deck was popular. I should have waited, apparently, because they're just going up. They're creeping up until they get the reprint.
Yeah.
So, I think a cheap deck.
Holy crap. Foil ones are insanely expensive.
Oh, I'm sure.
They spiked from, let's say, at Rivals of Ixalan the Reese, they were $6.50 if you had a foil one. At current state, they are $190.
Oh my god.
So if you had foil Goblin Lords back when Rivals was a big deal, I mean, they were like $4 until, you know, February, they spiked to 80, and then they spiked again in April.
Yeah.
To 190. So, I mean, if you had them, you know, back a few months ago, cash out.
Another one that's big right now, surprisingly, Blackleaf Cliffs.
Nope.
For a set of three of those, $140 for three of them.
That's not a surprise.
Not? I mean, all those fast lands for the longest time are like $5-6, but apparently we're up to like nearly $50 for these guys.
I mean, now like every deck is playing those fast lands. Like,
yeah.
The big decks in Modern are playing Black Eclipse. Jund, Black Red Hollow One.
Yeah.
Like, those are the two of the biggest decks by Metashare, and they both play Black Eclipse.
Sure.
So.
All right. Well, looking on, this event was actually won by humans.
Yep, I got the deck lists here. I got humans, Black Red Hollow One, two more humans, Living End, Red Green Eldrazi, and Affinity.
Yeah.
Top eight.
Let's look at that humans deck real quick. There's not, you know, this deck always has a few like one ofs because you have just so many humans to choose from. You can like, you know, pop in a Dark Confidant or something every once in a while. But these decks I've seen more often running these Kessig Malcontents now, which is basically like the Guiltleaf elf guy that deals damage to equal to elves. This one does it for humans. 2 in a red for a 3/1, enters the battlefield, it deals damage to target player equal to the number of humans you control. It seems to be kind of like a mainstay in the deck at this point. It's definitely something to be aware of. That card can just kill you out of nowhere if you're not sweeping
it
off the board.
Really, it really bugs me that I can't remember the name of the elf now.
Oh, yeah. It's something Guiltleaf, right?
I don't think it's Guiltleaf.
I don't know. You know what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah, it's one black for like a 3/3. One black green. I'm going to figure this out while we continue talking. I'll just be scrolling on my computer over here.
Yeah.
But yeah, like a big turnout for humans, a big turnout for Hollow One. Those are sort of the decks moving forward is the top couple of decks.
Real quick, so, third place humans deck. One Whirler Rogue in the main. Do you remember Whirler Rogue?
Is that like comes to play makes two? Wait, that's
yes.
The one that like comes to play makes two Thopters, tap a Thopter, makes guy unblockable.
Tap two untapped artifacts you control. Target creature can't be blocked. So you can tap two Thopters, or you can tap two Aether Vials if you want as well.
Ooh. Spicy. So, oh, you got a bunch of Phantasmal Images to copy it? This is spicy.
Very interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if only you could bounce it with Reflector Mage, that'd be pretty sick.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Kind of like their impression of Peon Kron Nalar to some extent, right? It gives you two hits, but also gets your guys through. I'm surprised to see Living End. Every once in a while, that deck is just like a blowout. But there's some really strong matchups for it. Obviously, it's got some really bad matchups, and I think if you win the matchup lottery, you can just, you know, go to town. Archfiend of Ifnir makes a big splash in this deck. That's a very very functional card in such a place. This is the 5-mana 5/4 demon with flying. Whenever you cycle or discard another card, put a -1/-1 counter on each creature your opponents control. It's like the one guy in this deck that isn't just like a vanilla beater, with the exception of the Horror of the Brokenlands, who is very good in here too.
That's a 5-mana 4/4. Whenever you cycle or discard a card, it gets +2/+1.
Yeah, and he's got cycling for 1 black, which is great because, you know, that's exactly what you're looking for with the deck. It's kind of interesting to see that not a lot of the original cycling commons in this deck even, like, continue to get played, except for Monstrous Karabid. But they just have printed so many better ones than Amonkhet. It's like the deck's got a total facelift.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised that we're still not playing the 3/3 artifact guy, just because, like, stacking the top of your opponent's deck is a very real function.
Oh, yeah, with the blue guy.
Yeah, Architect's Will is the card. I just was struggling with the name for a minute. So, yeah, I'm surprised we're not playing a couple of those just to get you.
Yeah, that would be cool. And then we got this red-green Eldrazi deck, which is interesting to say the least. I'm not sure about this one. I feel like there are a lot of weird interactions between Bloodbraid Elf and, like, the spells in the deck. And so,
what do you mean?
Like, so the incentive to run Bloodbraid Elf is we're just like an aggressive, like, green-red deck, right?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, like, the best thing that can happen with it is maybe you hit... Okay, so the best thing that you happen is you hit an Eldrazi Obligator and then you get to kick it, right?
Yeah.
But more often than not, you hit, like, a Nest Invader and you get, like, 3 dudes for 1, right? That's pretty cool. You hit, like, a Noble Hierarch. You could hit a Scavenging Ooze, which doesn't suck. But there's also, like, Dismember and Ancient Stirrings, which are fine, but it's just, it doesn't seem to maximize the potential of a Bloodbraid Elf. But then again, not many decks really can fully do that. There's always some kind of brick that you can run into.
I mean, there's not really much to maximize. You're just getting a free spell. Sometimes your free spell sucks because it's removal and your opponent has no dudes.
That's right. Yeah, that's the problem.
But that's just the two Dismembers. The Lightning Bolts go to your face. And if I Bloodbraid Elf into Ancient Stirrings and find, like, Reality Smasher, okay, like, I'm not going to complain about that. That's completely fine.
Yeah, that seems good. I don't know. Like, it just seems interesting to me that this is the home of Bloodbraid Elf. Like, we don't see a lot of Jund in this top 8. It seems like this one is just a deck, and it just happens to have Bloodbraid Elf in it. You know, it's not really a deck built around Bloodbraid Elf. But
yeah, no, I mean,
fine.
It's just
that's the way it goes.
Yeah, Bloodbraid Elf is just the best, like, green-red aggressive creature to pair with your Eldrazi. Like, it's completely fine.
All right. Fair enough. Okay. Anyways,
so let's talk. I got to sneeze, so give me a second here.
Bless you.
All right. I'm actually good. For some reason, it went away. So let's talk about the big two decks here. The double-digit metagame share percentage decks here.
Yeah.
And how what's the best way to fight? And that's Hollow One at 12.2%. And humans at 11%. The two of the three highest winning percentages, and the highest metagame shares.
Yeah, what's a good matchup for these guys?
Yeah, what are these decks weak to?
Well, Hollow One is particularly weak to Rest in Peace. But it's almost not fast enough.
So it's actually not really that weak to Rest in Peace. So you turn off, like, Gurmag Angler and the guys that come back. But then you just lose to, like, Flameblade Adepts and Hollow Ones. Nice. You lose to the Casino piece.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, Rest in Peace does things against part of it, but not you can't really prevent the other half.
Okay. Well, I'm imagining a deck that has Rest in Peace, but it's also got, like, Path to Exiles. I mean, you're in white, like, some kind of white-based control deck.
So you're looking at some sort of control deck, probably.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you're looking for cards that beat these two decks, let me look at the the composition of Hollow One and the composition of humans real quick to make sure I didn't miss some egregious thing here. No. Okay, so there are some engineer explosives in that Hollow One deck.
Yeah, this one splashes green for explosives and Ancient Grudge.
Yeah, Ancient Grudge is not something I particularly care about. That one has Hazard randomly, but... So, let me look at the humans deck real quick, and I will give you my witty retort.
All right, let's hear it.
So my witty retort is Ghostly Prison.
Yeah.
Doesn't so suck. Ghostly Prison is slow, because it's a turn 3 play. It kind of is in white with your other hate enchantments if you want to play Rest in Peace. Mm-hmm. But, like, these decks are trying to attack you, and they're trying to run off of a very narrow mana base. So, like, the Hollow One deck usually has 18 to 20 lands. The Humans deck has 19 lands. That 2 mana is a lot of mana. So they have to choose between spending their turn to attack you or spending their turn to deploy things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, especially with the Humans deck, 4 of the lands in the Humans deck can't pay for Ghost of Prison.
Yeah, that's true.
Because Ancient Ziggurat can't pay for Ghost of Prison.
Yeah, and Unclaimed Territory?
It can. It can pay Kellos.
Oh, it can.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, that would be insane. but Ancient Ziggurat can't pay for Ghost of Prison. So, you know, if one of these Humans decks happen to have some Reclamation Sages in the sideboard,
yeah,
which isn't a human, but it totally makes sense, but like, yeah, if people are still are full up on these Reclamation Sages, then you're not getting through. You're not leaning on Ghostly Prison to totally blow them out. They have a couple answers that they can board in, but if they don't come prepared with that kind of stuff, because you know the other human that actually disrupts that stuff is War Priest of Thune, but he only beats enchantments. He doesn't beat artifacts, so it doesn't particularly make sense to play War Priest of Thune.
Yeah.
So, but you can hide behind these Ghost Seekers and stuff like that to slow the game down and, like, draw your Wrath of Gods. It's not, like, 100% of a dependable strategy, but, like, if you're looking for a card that covers both of them in a sideboard matchup, Ghostly Prison is your card.
Sure.
But that's a very narrow card. If we truly are Hollow One Humans and Affinity in the top 5 here, and Jund is another creature-based deck that has to spend its mana to, like, deploy threats. Like, you might be able to convince me that you could play a Ghostly Prison in the main board of your control deck, and it not be completely embarrassing.
Like a blue-white control deck? Is that where you're imagining that, or what?
It doesn't have to be blue-white. It's just, like, if you're in a white-based control deck, like you said, you know, what? I want to play a white-based control deck.
Yeah,
you know, Ghostly Prison in any of those decks is playable because that's kind of the center. Like, I could see just playing, like, the mono-white enchantments deck.
Yeah.
With, like, Leyline and Ghostly Prison, and that shuts down the top 5 decks. You still get completely destroyed by, like, Tron, but Scapeshift can't kill you. Through the Breach beats you with Emrakul. Like, I'm just looking at the top, you know, the deck list here. Ghostly Prison and Wraths and stuff beat Hollow One and Humans. Leyline of Sanctity beats Storm, game 1, straight up.
Mm-hmm.
Affinity dies to Leyline and Stony Silence, to Ghostly Prison and Stony Silence. Jund dies to Leyline plus Ghostly Prison. Scapeshift can't beat a Leyline. Green Tron just destroys you, but you have to play. You can play, like, Ghost Quarters and Field of Ruins if you want, or, like, there's surely some way you can figure out a way to, like, interact with Green Tron if it, like, load your sideboard and stuff. Blue Red Through the Breach is an Emrakul deck, which is going to be kind of problematic. You could play like Nevermores to interact with them, or Gideon's Intervention. Burn loses to Leyline. Creature's Shadow loses to Ghost of Prison plus Leyline. Blue White Control is probably completely unwinnable, but Jace can't beat a Leyline, but they can bounce it with Cryptic. Mardu Pyromancer can't beat a Ghostly Prison plus Leyline. Like, so like you're seeing these like white hate enchantments are like really good against this whole list of decks you've got. Yeah. Living End is probably going to beat you game 1, except when Ghostly Prison like stops their strategy, so they have to like lay all their lands. So if you can just pick off the like one creature they play to attack, you get to live for a while and establish some sort of finisher.
Yeah.
But you have Rest in Peace, so you can just board in Rest in Peace, and then they have to figure like they have to lean on casting their big domes, and then figuring out how to like attack you with them profitably.
Sure.
So, like, the you know, Ghost of Prison is a thing that you can play that is not embarrassing. Rune Halo against some of these decks is very good. Against others, like humans, pretty bad. But, like, these white hate enchantments, I think, have a lot of stock in them. I just don't know if you just want to be, like, all in on the mono white enchantments deck, or if you want to, like, include some of them into a white X, whether it be black or blue, control deck.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
To kind of give you another color to interact in some other axes other than these hate permanents.
Yeah, I don't know. So another option, and you see this popping up, is, like, death and, like, mono, no, excuse me, not mono, green-white death and taxes.
Yeah.
And a lot of the green-white decks, not just Death and Taxes, but also, like, the Value Town and the Connors Company decks, are playing Warship in the sideboard, too, which I think is another one. Obviously, it's bigger than the Engineered Explosives can be. Reclamation Sage, as you mentioned, is a part of the Humans deck sideboards. That's a possibility. But Warship would be really hard for those decks to deal with. They don't have a lot to take it out.
So the problem isn't with the Warship itself. For the green white, the white and taxes deck, it's like, do they put themselves in a position where they can kill all your creatures?
Well, because, like, we'll buy some time, won't you?
I mean, you will buy some time if you're not, like, super behind with, like, the enchantment needs to be deployed. Like, if you get caught up early and, like, they're beating you down and you don't have enough time to get the enchantment into play, like, you might only have one or two creatures, and they can easily string together, like, lightning bolts and fatal pushes and stuff like that, and just, like, leave your Warship doing nothing.
Yeah.
So, like, that is a real possibility, but if you can go, like, Hierarch, Bladesplicer, Warship, then, like, you have a bunch of creatures, and your opponent has to do a ton of work, because they're all different CMCs, so they dodge Engineering Explosives. Like, so there's a lot of work that has to be done to sort of navigate their way through. And then you do also have to hope it doesn't get sniped by, like, Meddling Mage on Warship.
Sure. Yeah. I've been playing some Warship lately, and I've had games where, like, against a mono-red, like the Goblin Stompy deck or something, I'll have a Warship in play and one Burnt and Forge Tender that just does nothing all game. But they can't interact with it, you know? And the same is true for a Mirran Crusader. I like to have those guys with protection and just to sit them out there and be unkillable and, like, just have all the time in the world.
Warship?
Yeah.
I mean, I like it. But that's kind of the direction I'd want to be going in Modern right now, is playing these hate enchantments, because, like, white has the best sideboard cards, and it might just be time for some of these sideboard cards to move their way into the main board, and then, like, figure out a way to beat something like Tron.
Yeah.
Because, like, your mono white enchantments deck is not going to beat 1-2-7. It's just not.
No.
So...
not until we get the artifact from the new set that slows them down a little bit.
Yeah, Yeah, when Dampening Sphere is the thing, you just play a bunch of those main board, and then, like, maybe you can't lose to 1-2-7? I don't know.
Yeah. So, I was interested in this conversation because I'm going to the SCG in Milwaukee this weekend, and I've been feverishly trying to decide on a deck. All roads point to, like, Humans and Black Red Hollow One right now as, like, the two decks that need to be beaten. I'm certainly not going to pick up any one of those two decks at this point. But I've been playing Control for a very long time at my local events, and I just feel like I can't go to a 12-round event like that and play a Control deck and try to respond and try to fend off all the things that are thrown at me. It just seems like not
reasonable.
Good. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to play a deck that has answers to a lot of the big problem decks in the format, but also does its own thing and tries to win that way. And so I came back to my green-white Connors Company deck. I've changed it a little bit. I've modified it, and my sideboard now includes, like, almost no removal, because my plan against the decks with the creatures is I just want to combo out before they can kill me.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a good idea. Maybe it's a terrible idea. I'm going to find out on Saturday.
So here is a deck that I've seen on Reddit a couple times.
Yeah.
That I want to kick around with you and, you know, tell me what you think about it.
Yeah.
It's four color Saheeli Evolution.
Yeah.
So it has the line for a turn two combo win.
How can I do turn two?
So turn one, land bird.
Yeah.
Turn two, Lotus Cobra, fetch land, break it, Renegade Rallier, fetch land, break it, Saheeli Rai, blink Renegade Rallier, break the fetch, evolution the Lotus Cobra into Felidar Guardian.
That's pretty complex.
It is, but every one of your fetch lands is 3 mana when you put a Lotus Cobra into play.
Yeah, yeah.
So you just get to play 3-drop, 3-drop, and then blink your Renegade Rallyer for another 3 mana for Eldritch Evolution.
Yeah.
But like that's, you know, turn 2 against air, but like your opponent just plays like a turn 1 Goblin Guide after you play Burns Paradise, and they're dead on turn 2 if you have, you know, land Lotus Cobra, Renegade Rallyer. Like you have to have a perfect draw.
Yeah,
like
it's
totally a thing. But like you can play cards like Sun Titan and Restoration Angel and like Eternal Witness to have this like very big top end that you can just explosively get to very quickly with Lotus Cobra.
Sure.
And then it just can play the like Eldritch Evolution style game.
Yeah, toolbox.
Yeah, toolbox. Huh. And then like in the sideboard you get I think one of the better sideboard cards against creature decks right now that I think is very underrated. That I forgot existed.
What's that?
Fiery Justice.
Oh yeah, Fiery Justice is great.
Yeah, I forgot that card existed, and I've seen some decks playing like 3 of them in the sideboard of this 4-color Sealy
mm-hmm.
deck, and just like, all right, I'm gonna go 1/1/1/1/1 and kill all the humans, and then beat down with some Lotus Copers, and like, all right, well, I guess that gets the job done. So
yeah, yeah, I like that deck. It's really greedy with the mana base, obviously, and I think that scares me a lot. There's a lot of Blood Moon going around right now. There are the Blue Moon decks, there's the Hollow One decks, there's the Mardu Pyromancer decks. They all play Blood Moon in the main or in the side.
So here's the thing.
Yeah,
you say it's greedy with the mana base. It's like actually just got like 10 lands in it. It's got like 11 or 12 fetches,
mm-hmm.
and then you just got like 2 Forest of Plains and some shocks. And then you have all the green dorks. So, like, early you can just fetch your, like, green and white basic and then just, like, lean on your dorks and Lotus Cobras and stuff to, like, bring you home.
Yeah.
Because you have so many fetch lands that you have access to your colors.
Sure. So you just got to be faster than the Blood Moons. You got to get your stuff out and under them. But, you know, I don't know. I hear you, Daryl. I think it's interesting. I've played this deck before, and I just had a miserable time with it. But I can see where you're going with it. I don't think it's a bad choice. I think you have to be pretty good at piloting such a deck.
And, oh, yeah. I'm not saying in the dark that you should just be playing 4-color Sahili. Like, that's not my suggestion. My suggestion is, like, if we're trying to get under those decks, when we have a turn 2 combo win, the problem is in like game ones, our turn 2 combo win is unmolested. Probably turn 3 is more realistic if uninteracted with.
Yeah.
But those decks can get under you with a couple of Hollow Ones or a bunch of humans or a Meddling Mage or something like that. So it's like you can kind of be disrupted. So it's a little tricky to say, well, am I going to lean on this between like Meddling Mage and Thalia and Freebooter, there's a lot of interaction that can kind of disrupt your fragile.
Yes, yeah. This is another deck that plays like Warship in the side. It's got Magus of the Moon itself, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is kind of like sort of where I'm going with this Counters Company deck. Obviously, not a turn 2 win, but it's got a pretty consistent turn 3 win if left alone.
Unmolested, yeah.
So with that though, like I've got access to a lot of good sideboard pieces. I've main decked a lot of them: Scavenging Ooze, Cassali Pride Mage, Voice of Resurgence, Selfless Spirit in the main. But I feel like if I don't get to combo off, I've still got like an alternative. Whereas like I don't want to be drawing like in the Connor's Company decks. I don't want to be drawing like Viscera Seers off the top of my deck against like army of creatures when they've got one removal spell to take care of my dude. So the way it works is you just kind of like bait out their removal on your Devoted Druids, and if they don't have it, you win the game, right? But if they do have the removal, then they kill your creature, and then you get like your Knight of the Reliquary, which is probably one of the biggest creatures in Modern, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's got some potential. I think once again, like everything right now, there's going to be a lot of luck that's going to need to float me into day 2 because I'm going to need to get the good matchups, right? And that's true for everything. You know, there's going to be a lot of luck with all these Hollow One decks drawing the right spells and not just discarding all of their creatures and drawing all the lands and whatnot.
Sure.
But that's Modern. You know, that's how it goes. There's not a lot of room for error. You know, you make a mistake and that loses you an entire game and sometimes match. But more importantly, there are just so many variables, and there's so many bad matchups, and there's so many bad draws that you can get that you just have to roll the dice. It's gambling with a little bit of control, just a little bit.
just a little bit, yeah.
So I do have Fiery Justice in my sideboard right now because I'm splashing. Instead of going black, I'm going green, red, white. And it's a very, very light red splash right now. I've only got one Stomping Ground in the deck and four Birds of Paradise so that I can get Kesig Wolfrun. I can get Kesig Wolfrun off of my Nidalee Reliquaries, which is another mana sink for my infinite mana.
How many basics are you playing?
I'm playing five.
How often do you fetch them?
Pretty damn often.
So it might just be worth playing a Cinderglade.
You think so?
It depends on how often you have to fetch, like, Stomping Ground on turn one or two.
Yeah.
Like, if you're playing Bloodbraid Elf, I would play, say it needs to be a Stomping Ground, but if you're just playing it for, like, exactly Kesig Wolfrun, then, like, it could be a Cinderglade and save you two life occasionally.
Yeah, it probably could. Yeah, that's a good point. I do like to guarantee that I've got a turn one mana dork, though.
Yeah.
And a lot of time, I have, like, a lot of lands that produce colorless mana, so.
Okay, then it does. Then it needs to be a Stomping Ground.
Yeah. And that's really the thing. I've got, I have had four non-basic lands in the main deck that produce colorless, and a lot of times I'll draw, like, one forest and, like, two of those when I've got, like, a Knight of the Reliquary or an Eternal Witness in hand.
So you've got a Ghost Quarter, a Kesig Wolfrun.
Well, I had two Ghost Quarters and a Kesig Wolfrun, and I had a Gavinny Township.
Oh, a Township.
So I had to cut the Township for another fetch land, and I really didn't use it very often. But I thought about moving it to the side against, like, the control matchups and things, so I could just go, you know, start to get aggressive with my Birds of Paradise and whatnot.
Wolfrun is just better.
Wolfrun is better, yeah. It does kind of the same function, so.
Yeah, like, if you're going to have one of those two lands, it's Wolfrun, I think.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I guess I'll see how it goes. I can share my list. I'll put it on the on our Facebook page when I'm ready for the tournament. I'm still kind of deciding on my 15 in the sideboard, but definitely got a Warship in there. I'm trying that out, and I think I'm most excited about Nelspeth, Sun's Champion, which kind of gives me another option to try to win the game. Jund is a tough matchup for us, and so are a lot of other mid-range decks, and Elspeth is like kind of like an I-win-the-game card. Rather than trying to combo, my game plan just might be to ramp into an Elspeth and win that way, and that seems to do it.
I mean, other cards that you could play that are not completely unreasonable are like just other big sixes. Like if you want, like I don't know if you have Cord in your deck or something like that.
Yeah, I do.
You have Cord, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, you could play like big sixes and it's like Cord four, like Rurik Thar or like Inferno Titan or something like that. Sun Titan.
Yeah, Rurik Thar is interesting.
Yeah, I saw that in the evolution, the four color Sahili evolution deck that I was watching. Is like he's just like, yeah, you play this against Storm, you just evolution like a Restoration Angel into it, and then they can't ever play the game. But like against Jund, you have a lot of insulation with your Birds of Paradise, and not a lot of removal can touch the big sixes right now, because a lot of people are just playing like Fatal Push and maybe like one Terminate,
yeah,
and like one Pulse. So like you have a bunch of Birds of Paradise and stuff to insulate you from Liliana. And so, like, Sun Titan naturally insulates itself from Liliana because it just gets back, like, Renegade Rallyer or some goofiness. Mm-hmm. And then every attack turn you take, you just get back some goofy creature that doesn't really matter. It's just an insulation from Liliana, like a Voice Resurgence or something like that. And then, so since you have all these things that insulate you from Liliana, you can just, like, play Sunny T as, like, a big six to, like, Cord 4 in the Cord matchups. Like, it just depends on how you want to try and do it. If you want to play like a Planeswalker to like have a different axis, or you can have these like big sixes.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't thought of that. It's very rare that I'm going to reach 9 mana to Cord for X equals 6, but it's possible I just draw it, you know?
I mean, like the dudes are very real. Like, tapping your creatures for a big 6 is not very unreasonable.
It is when you're playing Jund, and they have all the removal, though. You know, and they're coming off your guys.
That's very fair.
So, I'll tell you what I got on my sideboard right now, and maybe you give me some pointers on what you might include. Basically, I should tell you the deck is just the Vizier combo. I've got three Viziers and four Devoted Druids and two Duskwatch Recruiter. It has no Viscera Seer and no Kitchen Finks in the main, and then it's got Knight of the Reliquary, Corsair, Crawfix, Tireless Tracker.
Sure.
Sideboard, I've got Avon Mind Sensor. I won't leave home without it because it punishes a lot of the decks that are our hardest matchups. Yeah. Elspeth's Champion, Stony Silence, Kataki War's Wage, Thalia Guardian of Thraben, Eidolon of Rhetoric, Burnt and Forge Tender. I've got a Blessed Alliance that I'm considering putting in because it gives me removal, which is much needed, and also some life gain. And then the untap is also kind of cool with Knight of the Reliquary. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Considering it. Fiend Hunter, Phyrexian Revoker, Scavenging Ooze, Warship, Mirror Crusader, Reclamation Sage, Choke, and then my two flex here are Kitchen Finks and Path to Exile. That's 17 cards, so I have to kind of work that out.
So, I would think about including Mages of the Moon.
Yeah, I actually have considered that. I need to pick one of those up.
So, I mean, it's just a really good card that, like, you can cord four early.
Mm-hmm.
You can play on turn two off of your Birds of Paradise. You can fetch your Stomping Ground, or you can just have, like, Plains, Forests, Birds, and play Mages.
Yeah.
And a lot of decks right now, their mana base is very weak to having it all turned into mountains. So, like, yeah, that's a very reasonable direction for you to go. It's just, like, a free bullet that you can cord for.
Mm-hmm.
Or Coco, yeah. Fiery Justice is another card.
That's right, yeah, I didn't mention Fiery Justice. That's one of the possibilities, though. I have that set aside.
Thalia, I'm not so sure about if you're only playing, like, one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I might cut that.
Like, I would rather have, like, a bit, like Rurik Thar, but that's so hard to court for.
Yeah.
Like, you just want something that's more impactful. Like, even an Eidolon of the Great Rebel. Like, because you're bringing it in for, like, Storm, and, like, can bring it against control. You just want them to die. Like,
I do bring it in against control, but
yeah,
mostly as just more ways to, like, kind of hedge my bets against the Wrath spells. It, like, puts them on five. I have a Selfless Spirit, like, in the main deck.
If you want to hedge against Wrath spells, play a Gaddic Teeth.
Yeah, but Gaddic Teeth shuts off my cords and my Cocos.
I mean, that's fine. Like, you're not putting Gaddic Teeth into play until you're so far ahead that they just need to not Wrath the board.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, Gaddic Teague, like, a lot of people play Gaddic Teague in, like, the wrong way,
uh-huh,
in that they, like, play it on turn two when they have, like, these cords and Cocos in their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Gaddic Teague is, like, the bullet you tutor for, or the card you play on, like, turn five when you've got, like, a knight and a Tireless Tracker, and you're like, all right, my opponent's at, like, seven, I got these two big idiots, I'm going to play this Gaddic Teague, and they have to have, like, a kill spell for Gaddic Teague and the Wrath of God, or they're not going to kill me.
Yeah,
because
that's true.
Like, that's like, Gaddic Teague is basically Selfish Spirit number two that also just beats Storm.
Yeah.
Because, like, they have to have Grape Shot to kill it or a bounce spell, mm-hmm, but it turns off Gifts so they can't go find it, and it turns off Passive Flames so they can't, like, use Passive Flames extra thing.
Yeah.
But it turns off all the, like, big combo decks, and it's also just good against Tron because you turn off all the big non-Ulamog fat that they have in their deck.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, man, that's definitely a consideration. I thought about Gaddic Teague. I was a little hesitant about it for the reason I mentioned, but I have played it in I have, like, a Naya kind of more, like, aggro-y zoo deck that just plays Bloodbraid Elf instead of Coco,
yeah,
and company, and it's very good in there. It was really strong.
Yeah, I think it's a card you want to consider.
Yeah. All right, we better move on because we had a little bit more to cover yet in the last 10 minutes.
We gotta talk about Dominaria.
Yeah, we do. First of all, before we go into our picks, because we haven't gotten yet to red, green, or gold, before we go to our red picks, let's just kind of go back and take a swing through the cards that have been officially spoiled in the colors that we have already done. So that's white, blue, and black. Is there anything that stands out to you in the official spoilers for white, blue, and black, Daryl?
So let me look at all the cards that have actual pictures. I'm going to pull that one up. Let me keep scrolling here.
While you're looking, I'm going to tell you one. This one doesn't necessarily seem to be, like, a Eternal playable or not. Well, maybe it is.
Go ahead.
I don't know. But the art is beautiful. Karn's Temporal Sundering is very, very cool looking.
Yeah, I really like the art on that one.
Make a great wallpaper. But this card, let me read it. 4 blue-blue for a legendary sorcery, so you have to control a legendary creature or planeswalker. Target player takes an extra turn after this one, return up to one non-land permanent to its owner's hand, and then you exile it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I kind of get the feeling that these legendary sorceries are kind of just unplayable in Modern, except for very specific combo decks. And, you know, this one doesn't seem to really be...
Like, that one might be playable in, like, the white-black smallpox deck that plays a bunch of planeswalkers.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
The Esper smallpox?
No. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was thinking of Urza's Ruin's Blast. I was thinking of the white one.
Oh, yeah.
My bad. Bobby!
That's okay. Yeah, that one's pretty cool, too.
yeah, the Karn one is not playable. Like, like in taking turns, you'd have to have exactly Jace out. Like, if you trigger off of any legendary permit, then you could have stuff like Oboro, Palace in the Clouds, or, like, Minamo, or what's the draw cards land?
Draw cards land.
Yeah, it's got, like, a Howling Mind staple to it. Mikokoro.
Mikokoro.
All the legendary lands from Kamigawa, that then you can cast your time walk. But sure. It only triggers off planeswalkers, so you have to have exactly Jace, which is kind of tough to do.
Yeah.
So we want to talk about other cards.
Yeah, what else?
So this one's just cool. I don't know if it's actually playable. Cabal Paladin. It's a 4-mana, 4/2 common. Human Knight creature. Mm-hmm. Whenever you play a historic spell, Cabal Paladin deals 2 damage to each opponent. And as a reminder, artifacts, legendaries, and sagas are historic.
I'm not very excited about this one, but it's a potential combo piece. I can see, like, 0-mana artifacts being repeatedly played.
Yeah, I mean, like, anything that, like, I think this might can be a closer in, like, some very fringe modern decks. Like, I think there are better closers in, like, Ironworks. So the question is there a way that you can, like, leverage this with, like, legendary creatures? But, it's not great. I just think it tickles my fancy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of those things that I like for, like, Commander.
Sure.
Yeah.
Take a look at Bord the Weatherlight, which is, like, the fixed Ancient Stirrings. It's 1 and a white for a sorcery. Yeah. Look at the top 5 cards of your library. You may reveal a historic card from among them and put it into your hand. Rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. Artifacts, legendaries, and sagas are historic.
Could this be an instant? Like, I think this is fine as an instant.
Yeah, it would be pretty dang good as an instant, but yeah, I don't think it's broken.
No, but I mean, it's completely reasonable. It's a sorcery. They've been printing stuff like this in sorcery speed recently.
Yeah.
But, like, this is, like, a card I look at and go, man, this would be broken at 1 mana, and, like, exactly what I want as a 2-mana instant.
I mean, there's a good chance that you just brick with this quite often. Yeah. If your deck is built specifically for it, if you're playing, like, Affinity, and this just happens, like, it's probably not good enough for Affinity, you play Ancient Stirrings, but, for example, you play a deck that's just all artifacts, I think it's very good in that kind of deck. You just have, like, all the choices.
Yeah, like, if Karklan Ironworks wants Ancient Stirrings 5 and 6, they play this card.
But I don't know. Maybe standard playable. Depends what standard looks like. Probably not standard playable unless there's some kind of artifact deck. I don't know.
Maybe there's enough legendary cards to end up in every deck that, like, this is playable.
Yeah. So, I don't know. It's worth
and the sagas? I don't know.
Yeah.
I want to look at some sagas because some of these sagas look insanely cool.
Yeah, they do.
I want the original art for one of them on my wall, but that's expensive, so I'll get that. And that saga is the Marari Conjecture.
Yeah, this is really badass.
So 4 and a blue enchantment saga. We all know that sagas, at this point, as it enters the battlefield, after your draw step, you get a lower counter, sacrifice after it gets a lower counter 3, and you trigger the ability. So saga 1 is return target instant from your graveyard to your hand. Saga 2 is return target sorcery from your graveyard to your hand. And saga 3 is the effect of Mirari, which is until end of turn, whenever you cast instant sorcery, copy it. You may choose new targets for the copy. So Mirari makes you pay 2 every time you do that. This just lets you do it. It's just like a Sworn Intelligence, basically.
Seems good.
Yeah, this is pretty strong. Like, for a control deck, like, if you play this in standard, you can, like, play it and get back Hieroglyphic Illumination.
Mm-hmm.
And then lower counter 2 gets you back Fumigate or Approach or something like that. And then lore counter 3, you just double down on, like, whatever. Like, this is just random, you know, mental gymnastics. This is not actually what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But, like,
yeah, it is really damn expensive on 5.
Yeah, like,
just drawing 2 cards very slowly.
Like, lore counter 3, I want to do in, like, modern.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's, like, turn 6, turn 7.
Yeah. Yeah, like, can I proliferate this so that I can combine it with a bunch of, like, sleight of hands and lightning bolts?
Yeah, but, like,
Pyromancer's Ascension just does it better, unfortunately. Yeah. Like, well, this card is so sweet, and the art is amazing.
It might see some play in Standard. I wouldn't be surprised if it does. But yeah, you're right. The art is amazing. These sagas seem to be, like, thematically, they're kind of like a piece of artwork or, like, some, like, book or some kind of rune or something. And this one looks like a painting a la, like, Ice Age or something. It's very cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Speaking of ice, you made a perfect segue to my next saga.
Yeah, there's another one with some very classic art on it. Time of Ice. Yeah. Go ahead.
Time of Ice, yeah. 3 and a blue for an enchantment saga. Again, I'm not going to read how sagas work. 1 and 2 are the same. Tap target creature and opponent controls. It does not untap during its controller's untap step for as long as you control Time of Ice. And then Saga 3 is return all tapped creatures to their owner's hands.
Okay, this one's really damn good. This one's definitely going to see play in Standard.
Absolutely. So it's 4 mana, kind of suspended evacuation that also gains you some life. Because it ices down the 2 creatures for as long as it's in play. So, like, you play it on turn 4, and you ice their biggest guy, and then it forces them to extend into you, and then you ice that guy. And then you bounce both of them, and they lose, like, all the mana tempo from it after that.
Yeah.
But if they don't extend into you, you just ice their next biggest guy. And you still threaten to bounce, and they can't really attack you on the turn it threatens to, like, pop, because then you bounce their tapped creatures, because if they attack you, unless they're, like, going for lethal, then you just play up cool spells. So, like, this, like, I think this kind of competes with Phyrexian Etchings, or whatever it's called, the saga, like, the Black Saga that Wrath of the Ward.
Yeah.
I think these are kind of two competing sagas, because they basically do the same thing, it feels like to me, which is they clear the board. The Black Saga gives you the upside of, you know, bogging your opponent's graveyard and letting you protect one of your guys. But they basically both clear the board, so it's like a matter of how do you want to clear the board? Because if you bounce, you still have to deal with them on the way back down. So it's like, this is like, this feels like a top end of like a tempo deck, like a blue X creature deck, like plays this, ices a blocker and attacks.
Yeah.
And then like untaps, ices another blocker and attacks. And then like, you can't attack, though. Like, you attack, and then you untap, upkeep, draw, bounce their tap creatures, and attack again. So, like, this feels like the top end of, like, an aggro deck trying to ice your opponent's creatures down to, like, finish the game.
Yeah, this one's quite a bit more impactful with the first activation, but obviously Phyrexian Scriptures destroys all creatures on the second activation. So, I don't know, you gotta view them as different cards. I'm wondering if there's a good way to, like, take advantage of the bounce all tapped creatures type of thing.
Yeah, if you can tap your opponent's creatures, like...
Yeah, I can't think of anything that does that right now in Standard.
I mean, there's Icy Manipulator.
There is Icy Manipulator, another 4 drop.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's things that tap creatures. I just don't know what they are. But, like, tapping creatures is, like, a big deal.
Yeah.
Like, so... I think this is much more like a finisher on top of like a blue-white or blue-green or whatever, like, beatdown deck.
Sure.
Like, your opponent, like, plays their, like, Glorybringer or something on turn... No, that's a bad one. They exert and kill one of your guys.
Yeah.
They play, like, their, like, not Glorybringer creature. I don't know what big creatures are in Standard. I'm really bad at this. I haven't played Standard in a while.
Insert dinosaur here.
Hazoret, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Insect dinosaur, whatever, the Scarab God. You tap down their Scarab God after they play it, and you like get your last few points of damage through.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I see on that. But the art looks sweet.
Yeah, it's very cool art. The white ones are very cool too. There's like Triumph of Gerard, which is like a sculpture. And then History of Benalia looks really awesome. That's the one
Fall
I think we talked about already, but.
Yeah, and there's Fall of Thrain, which looks like a tapestry. There's one other card that from the new spoilers that are official that I want to look at.
Sure.
That I think is interesting in a lot of things. I think it's interesting in Standard. I think it's interesting in Commander.
Uh-huh.
Not so much in Modern, unfortunately. Although you could like make a deck with it and kind of make it happen. You really do this. It's Roth Capuchin, Ship's Mage. That's a tongue twister. It's 2 blue-white for a legendary creature, Human Wizard. It's a 3/3 with flash and flying. You may cast historic spells as though they had flash.
Okay, so you're getting a little ahead of yourself, because this is gold. We haven't done gold yet, but spoiler alert, Wrath.
Yeah.
That's right, we have done blue and white.
Yeah, I don't think this is an eternal playable, like, full eternal, okay, like, competitive format playable card. All right,
fair enough.
But I do think it's very interesting. Like, yeah, if you're gonna play this in a non-standard format, you're just better off playing Fair.
This does something that no other commander allows you to do. Giving your artifacts flash is really cool, and it's an uncommon. How odd. It seems like a rare.
Yeah, this does seem like a very rare effect. I get this guy, like, this guy basically is like Shimmermere number 2 in your white blue artifact deck.
Yeah.
If you're playing it in Commander, you can make it your Commander and have, like, these flashy artifact combos.
Mm-hmm.
Also makes your Legends and Sagas, you know, instant speed, which isn't unreasonable.
Yeah, the weirdest thing about him is it makes your Sagas instant speed. So imagine, like, flashing in Fall of Thran and destroying all lands at the end of their turn. That would probably be a terrible time to do that since you are affected first. But, and, you know, insert Saga here, like the black one, for example, in Standard. You can instant speed +1/+1 on a creature, and then all of a sudden you're destroying all creatures at your upkeep.
Yeah, I mean, you can instant speed make this guy a 4/4 artifact creature, and then untap and blow up all the creatures, and then you can flash in something like Fall of Thran.
Because
the key to Fall of Thran is, like, I kind of said this on someone's Twitter that I saw them tweeting about Fall of Thran, and I'm like, the key in Standard is getting Fall of Thran and Phyrexian Scriptures to line up. Because what you can do is, if you line them up correctly, if you play Fall of Thran on the turn after Saga 2 goes off in Phyrexian Scriptures, you untap and you draw a card and you put both triggers on the stack, you bog your opponent's graveyard, and then everyone puts lands back in the play.
Mm-hmm.
So your opponent has no graveyard, and then you get lands back, and they don't. So, like, lining those two up is kind of the way to make that happen in Standard.
Yeah.
But I don't know how playable that's going to be, because we don't really know how fast the new Standard is going to be.
Sure.
You know? But, like, it's a very powerful thing to be doing that I could see, like, being played and doing something reasonable. Like, it's a powerful effect that seals the game. And this guy kind of enables that to happen at instant speed on turn 6.
Yeah, man. Seems
like, because, like, if you play that Esper deck, you wipe the board on turn 5 after you play this guy. And then on turn 6, you can flash in an Armageddon in their upkeep and lock the board down because you have a 4/4, which is the biggest creature, and they can't do it.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know if it's good enough. Like, I don't know if the removal will be good enough to make it work. But it's something that interests me.
Yeah, it's definitely, like, you know, talk about Brawl. This would be a fun general to play in Brawl.
I don't know if there's enough artifacts and stuff to, like, make it happen in Brawl. Like, I think you really need Esper to make it good. Like, I think you need a third color.
But it would be fun. Maybe not good.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair.
All right, let's go on to red. We got to talk about red today, and then we're going to save green and black for next time.
Green and gold and artifact.
Green and gold. Oh, yeah, green. Sorry, we did block already. Yep. So for red, I've got a couple. First of all, Lava Runner. This guy is a 1-mana 1/2 human wizard. As long as there are 2 or more instants or sorcery cards in your graveyard, it gets +1/+0 and has haste. It's a goblin guide. My question is this modern playable, or is it just too awkward in that you already have to have the spells in your graveyard for it to be 2/2 haste?
Too awkward.
All right. It's like, an interesting design for sure.
Yeah, I could see it maybe seeing play. No, I can't even see it seeing play in, like, the blue-red Kilnfiend deck.
No.
Because, like, there are just better things to Kilnfiend. Like,
yeah.
Like Enigma Drake is just better than this. So, yeah. Like, this is playable in Standard, but, like, I don't think it's going to see much play outside of that.
It feels almost like a fixed Goblin Guide to me.
Yeah, it does.
All right,
fixed Swift Spear, actually.
Yeah, Swift Spear. All right, let's move on to the next one then right away. Goblin War Chief is getting reprinted, and it's going to be modern playable now.
Yeah, this is a slam dunk modern card, like, 100%. Like, so goblins kind of to be able to play the mid range goblins. The problem was they were always too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the Goblin Chieftains of the world, like, paying 3 for them is a little rough. Same thing here with War Chief. But, like, being able to deploy, like, double Goblin after you play this guy is like, really good.
Yeah.
Like, unfortunately, you really need, like, Ringleader to, like, make the Goblin deck insane. But, like, it makes, like, Siege Gang Commander a reasonable curve topper in the Goblin decks. because your CGA costs 4 at that point.
Oh, we don't have Ringleader in Modern?
No, Goblin Ringleader was printed outside of Modern. I can't remember what set it said.
Okay, let me check on that. Yeah, Dual Dex is the new border one. Okay. Yeah, that's a bummer because that would be...
Yeah, if, Goblin Ringleader was in Modern, like, this guy would be insane because then you have 3-mana Ringleaders that can, like, net you some card advantage. It's basically your lead the Stampede. It's, like, super playable. Like, yeah, that would make this card very good.
Maybe that guy's yet to be spoiled in this new set.
If they reprint Goblin Ringleader, I would be very scared of playing against Goblins in Modern. That, like, that makes it a legitimate deck. Like, black-red Goblins.
Yeah.
Like, because you get the Prowl Cost and Earwig Squad to be one less, so it's black-black to, like, Jester's Cap your opponent on turn, like that. It is real dumb. But yeah, this is... I'm a big fan of the nostalgia of Goblin Warchief. I remember it being standard and being, like, the most... It's Skullclamp enabling Goblin Bidding, which was just busted. It's super fun to play.
It seems cool. I don't know. The Goblin deck has so many red-costed creatures. It doesn't have... There are not a lot of colorless or generic mana costs in their cost.
It's just haste.
It's the haste, yeah.
Haste is so good.
But you already have the haste guy.
I mean, you have Chieftain. So, I mean, it just depends on, like, what slant Goblins takes. I think Warchief will be Chieftains 5 and 6 for now. Mm-hmm. But if things like Rabblemaster are actually playable on Goblins, and I think they need to get Warchief, or not Warchief, Ringleader,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is a fine reprint. They reprinted Sylvan Messenger, standard.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think that Goblin Ringleader is wholly unreasonable. But if they get, like, Ringleader and then, like, one other card, my guess would be that Rabblemaster would be that card that goes into it. Then you have Goblins being this, like, mid-range deck, which is really strong.
Yeah. A Haste Pile Driver for 1 red is pretty good, too. Can't complain about that.
Yeah,
All right, let's talk about another Goblin. This is my favorite reprint. This is my favorite callback so far. It's Squee the Immortal. Red for a 2/1 legendary creature Goblin. You may cast Squee the Immortal from your graveyard or from exile.
So clearly we all know that this is the, like, fourth food chain creature or whatever. Third or fourth one.
Yeah.
Because there's Miss Hollow Griffin, there's Eternal Scourge, there's this guy. So third one. He also can upgrade the Food Chain deck's Legacy if they play red, insofar as he can be cast from the graveyard. So you can kick off your Food Chain combo with cards from your graveyard.
Oh, yeah, you can. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, because, like, the problem you have with the Food Chain decks in Legacy is that if you didn't draw Deathrite Shaman, if your guy got countered, then you were in trouble. Like, because your guy would be countered, it would go to the graveyard. And if you weren't playing, like, if you didn't draw Deathrite Shaman and you weren't playing Relic, you can never get it in exile to, like, execute your Food Chain combo.
Yeah.
So, like, this is just, like, Food Chain guy number 3. It gives, like, mid-range decks and standard that find ways to sacrifice creatures. It gives them Sacrifice Father. It gives you a mana sink to do things with. I don't know if this sees play in Dredge as, like, one of, as, like, the slot that Haunted Dead took up.
Yeah, I've heard that. I don't know about that one.
Cast your graveyard and bring back your Prize of Albums. I don't know if it makes a deck that, like, wanted to exist before that, like, wanted to cast things from the graveyard. I don't actually know, but, like, I could see it having fringe applications in Modern. I could see it being a player as, like, a value engine mid-range thing in Standard.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's something like Sacrifices Creatures or something like that in Standard that, like, makes this very good. That, like, there's an ability or, like, a way to draw cards when you off creatures or something like that. That way you can just get extra value from, like, having this guy to cast from your graveyard and then off it. Or, like, it gives you targets for your Hashep Oasis late game. In your, like, green-red monsters deck, you can cast this guy and then Hashep Oasis it later. It just gives you always a threat to, like, combine with your Kenras and stuff like that. So, like, it doesn't make your green-red monsters deck, and if you splash another color or whatever color you splash, it doesn't make it, like, more weak to graveyard hate.
Yeah.
As much as the Kenras are just, like, playable creatures that also give you something on the graveyard, this guy is just, like, a derpy 2/1 to beat down with, but also gives you, like, more graveyard presence.
Yeah, he's better than the original Squee. It was just a 1/1, right? So yeah. I think the two power is a pretty big deal.
I mean, there is some relevance for the card being in your hand. versus being, like, castable from the graveyard.
Yeah.
Because, like, there are some effects that use the ability to discard a card to do something.
Oh, sure. Totally but different function.
Yeah, but I think that, like, this card is definitely good in Food Chain. And it can see play in modern, like, graveyard decks that, like, just dump it in there and have another mana sink.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it will certainly see play soon. I just don't know if there's going to be a card that, like, when a creature dies, draw a card, or sacrifice a creature, get some benefit. If there's something like that in modern or in standard, there's like the guys like sack two creatures, get a creature back this set. That seems really good with Squee. Play Squee, sack Squee, and another guy, get back a giant monster, like, whee!
Yeah, man, it can't be bad, I don't think. I mean, it seems to do stuff. It's got such a unique function, and it's just like impossible to deal with. If control is a really big deal, you go along against control, and you've always got a 2/1, and that doesn't suck.
Yeah, I mean,
unfortunately, control in standard is just like approach the second sun. And
yeah, until they put a big creature in play, your 2/1 doesn't suck. Yeah, I agree.
And he can block. That's the thing that a lot of recursive creatures like him can't do. You know,
he can block. Yeah.
So, all right, going on. The next one's a saga I want to talk about. Flame of Keld. It's an uncommon. It's 1 and a red. First activation is discard your hand. Number 2, draw 2 cards. And number 3, if a red source you control would deal damage to a permanent or player this turn, it deals that much damage plus 2 to that permanent or player instead.
So this is basically Pyromancer Swath.
It is, yeah.
On a time delay. And that might make it better.
Yeah.
So the problem with Pyromancer Swath is that, like, you played it on turn 3 and you were just priced into going off. Otherwise, you were, like, super bugged. This card, you can play, and it kind of has to spend 2. Like, you lose your hand, but, like, there are times where your hand is just bad, or, like, you want your cards to be in your graveyard, and then you get card advantage out of it, unlike Pyromancer Swath, and then, like, when you get that card advantage burst, plus, you know, if you have something like Past in Flames,
mm-hmm.
like, you have... If you have enough mana, you know, it's turn 4, you have the mana to cast Past in Flames, you can put some rituals together, or... do something with the, you know, 4 cards you've drawn in the interim, you're cooking with gas here. You're moving in the right direction. It also does this for red sources.
Yeah, so if you're playing creatures, doesn't it?
Uh-huh. Creatures and planeswalkers and permanents, like Purphoros and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So if you're playing an aggro deck, you can use this as, like, you know, you've deployed some goblins on turn 1 and 2, you play Flame of Keld, you discard your hand, you draw a few extra goblins, and then the turn after that, you have double damage on your beatdown turn. As long as you'll get Wrathed, you're looking pretty good.
Yeah. I don't think that, like, Burn necessarily hates this card either. I mean, Burn goes into top deck mode, and then it draws a Flame of Keld. Then you get 3 cards off the top of your deck, and then next turn, your Lightning Bolts are 5 damage.
Yeah, I mean, this is not... I think it's a good card for, like, the sideboard against control decks.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, like, because, like, you can play less, like, you have to play these, like, very finagly ways with Burn to, like, sneak Burn spells in. And here you can just board out the bad cards, which I think are creatures, in all honesty.
Yeah.
And then just, like, slam this and you're like, all right, I'm going to throw all these Burn spells at you. Figure it out.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that or Young Pyromancer seems pretty decent with this guy.
It does double up on the creatures. That's very true. I didn't even think of that.
This will not trigger a token, though, which is a little awkward.
No, it does not make tokens.
But I don't know. Interesting enough.
Yeah, if only Monastery Mentor was red.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
All right. And then the last one I've got in red is Wizard's Lightning with a big old question mark. And I think we already talked about this one, basically agreeing that we don't need more Lightning Bolts in Modern, but definitely we'll see play in Standard.
Even if you need more Lightning Bolts, you gotta have a Wizard. Yeah, that's not gonna get stuff done. Bad.
All right, Daryl, you got anything in red that you want to talk about?
Skizix. No, not really.
yeah, Skizix may get played in Standard, who knows?
So I don't know if, like, Goblin Chain Whirler is a card that might see play. I don't know. It's like a decent sideboard card for red aggro. It's a 3/3 first striker. When it enters the battlefield, deals 1 damage to each opponent and each creature and planeswalker they control. So it cleans up things like Lingering Souls really well.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if it's good enough to see Modern play. Because, like, I feel like the red decks in modern don't care. That's where I thought I was getting. It was like, you know, I don't really think they care, but it's one of those things that, like, if you're playing an aggro deck that's really soft to Lingering Souls, it gives you an answer to it.
Yeah, I don't think so.
No?
Probably, okay. Probably irrelevant. I mean, they're happy to see creatures because then they got Searing Blaze for them.
Yeah, I accept. I just thinking out loud.
All right. Yeah, I don't know. Warlord's Fury is kind of interesting in that it's just a one mana cantrip. It's a sorcery, though. Creatures you control gain first strike until end of turn, draw a card for a red. If that was an instant, I could see that, you know, being potentially useful in some decks, but
that's
fine. It's good limited. Yeah, otherwise, I don't know. Goblin Barrage is interesting. Kicker, sacrifice a goblin, cost 3 and red for a sorcery. Deals 4 damage to target creature. If the spell is kicked, it also deals 4 damage to target player or planeswalker.
I think that's just too slow.
If there's a goblin deck, maybe in the sideboard, I don't know. 4 mana is a lot. Was a tribal goblin.
I mean, in modern, there's Goblin Grenade.
Yeah, that's true. That's just much better, isn't there?
Yeah, right. If I'm going to give up a goblin, I want to pay 1 mana and deal 5 damage to your face.
Yeah. All right, well, there you go. We're going to go on to green next week, and I'm excited for green. There's a lot of really cool green cards. A lot of cool reprints in green as well. And I look forward to seeing more cards spoiled, as we're getting quite a bit of them these days.
Yeah.
Officially spoiled with beautiful art. So.
Yeah, all the art's wonderful.
Yeah. All right, anyways, thanks for listening. Check you next time.
Take it easy.
See you later. Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of MTGcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website, and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.